All right, let's open with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for the opportunity to get together once again. Thank you for those that have made time to come and to hear more about how to communicate effectively and trying to help our marriages to be something that honors and glorifies you, and an opportunity to enjoy the gift that you have given to us, our spouse. And so I pray that you would help us to be attentive, help us to take the information that we receive, that we would strive to apply it to our lives. And not everything will necessarily apply to everybody, but I know there's something that we will discuss that will help everyone. And so help each of us to look for those things and to pull from the information tonight what we need to hear and what we need to know. In Christ's name, amen. All right, week three. Last week, we went over seven obstacles to effective communication. And really, just to wrap that up, you know, we have to learn to let stuff go. And no matter what it is in your life or what's particular to you, you aren't going to change your spouse. And they're not going to change you unless you have that desire to change within yourself. And that's really the bottom line. You know, that's not going to make me change. I have to want to change. I have to want to be different to please her. She has to want to be different to please me and to get along in a better relationship. And so really what we've got to do is you've got to accept your spouse for who they are, for what they are, for where they are in their maturing process, and really pray for them. You know, we talked about that last week, week before, how that, you know, our prayer should be, you know, not, you know, God change them, but God help them to be all that you want them to be. You know, remember we talked about the triangle, and the closer that each of you get to God, the closer you will by default become. And so you're not praying for them to change to meet your wishes, but you're praying for both of you to be drawn closer to God, knowing that as you're drawn closer to God, that you will just, again, by default, get closer to one another. So, yes, we are to strive to understand our spouse. We are to practice communicating effectively with them. And if we don't, what ends up happening often is we do end up arguing. We end up getting into rather uncomfortable conversations or arguments or fighting. So tonight I want to cover seven ways that we argue or communicate unfairly. And then I want to go into some positive things after that. So communicating or arguing unfairly. The first thing often that we try to do is we generalize. We are guilty of generalizing. When you know, when you get in a conversation and you start getting uncomfortable, and again, not all of these apply to everybody, but I'm sure as we go through these, you will look and say, you know what, yeah, that's what I tend to do, that's what they tend to do, and you'll see yourself in here somewhere. But sometimes people have a tendency to generalize. And by that, we make that leap from a specific situation to the generalization of, you know, you always have to have your way. Well, do they always have their way? Probably not, but that's the accusation we make. That's what we throw out there. And even with that, let me say, because that came up a little bit in some of the surveys as well. Does it really matter who gets their way and who doesn't get their way? I mean, really, that's, you know, bottom line, where rubber meets the road. Does it really matter who gets their way? You know, on a basketball team, does it really matter if the center dunks the ball, the guard shoots from the outside, or the forward shoots inside? Is the goal not to get 2 points or 3 points? All right, that's the goal. So really, does it matter who on the team scores the points? It really doesn't in the long range. And so we've got to keep that in mind. You know, he never says anything nice about me. All right, again, maybe he doesn't. But let's analyze that. Does it really matter? You know, is your confidence, is your self-esteem built in the fact that, well, my husband tells me I look nice? Or is your confidence and self-esteem in the fact that you're a child of God and that God knows that you're beautiful and that God sees your beauty? And again, it's the perspective that we come to the table with. And so, no, we shouldn't generalize. You know, we need to stay on specific situations. But on the flip side, if someone does generalize, again, don't default back to one of the obstacles to a communication. You know, and we're going to look at this a little bit later, but be the stronger person to just bring it back. Don't let it upset you. Don't let it get you off track. Just come back to where you need to be in your conversation. All right. Another one is character assassination. All right. Here's where, you know, you're getting uncomfortable. And again, why do we do all of these things? Because we get uncomfortable. We feel like we're getting put on the defensive. You know, someone's attacking us. And by default, we try to we want to. Just went blank the word I want. We withdraw. What's the military word when you go back the other way? Retreat. Thank you. Yeah, we retreat. And then once we've retreated somewhat, then we start thinking of ways. OK, how can I attack back? You know, what can I lob back at them? And so we start in with, again, personal attacks on our spouse. You know, you're just like your mother. You're just like your father. You know, you're no fun to be with. You know, you're no joy to be with. You know, and we just start throwing things out there, trying to hurt their character and assassinate them. You know, we start picking on their weaknesses. You know, well, you're just rude. You know, whatever. And so we need to not do that because that's not helping anything. Third, the fog cover or cloud cover. All right. Here's where you just start making vague accusations instead of being detailed, instead of specifically saying to your spouse, you know, here's what's bothering me. You know, here's what I see. You know, we kind of make it vague and open and, you know, and not really, really trying to be definitive. You know, maybe these are poor examples, but I was trying to come up with some things that weren't really, really specific, but that just try to get the point across. But, you know, you always take me for granted. And I bet you wouldn't make it a day without me. All right. That's kind of general, isn't it? But it's something that we would throw out there and trying to hurt the other person or trying to get them to back off. Number four, the topper. How many of you like Dilbert, the comic strip Dilbert? Anybody? Okay. Four or five of you. Dilbert was a pretty cool comic back in his day. I don't even know if it's still out there or not. But every now and then they'd have the topper that came in. And no matter what anybody said, he had to top them with something even better. All right. You know, so he was constantly, you know, we might say upping the ante. He was always going a step beyond. And unfortunately, often when you start arguing, what happens? We do the same thing. But it's with, we pick negative things to do that with. You know, one person does something, you know, and the spouse says, well, I can't believe you just did whatever. You know, and then the other one comes back with, well, I can't believe you even said something about that because it's really no big deal. And now, you know, you're making a big deal out of it. And then it just goes back and forth. And they just keep topping the other person. And getting a hand up on them. Okay, then the shotgun approach, or the shotgun is where you just start lobbing anything you can think of at them. You know, in your arguments. Any fault, any misdeed, anything you can, you know, just whatever. You know, you're lazy, you never pick up, you just watch TV, you're just playing, you just, you know, on and on and on. You just keep throwing things out there, any fault, any weakness that they might have. And then the closet skeletons. You know, you keep something hidden away for as long, you know, until you need it. You know, you don't forgive and forget. You know, you might forgive for a period of time, but you're going to keep these things, you know, locked up until you really need them, or until you feel like you really need them. And then all of a sudden, you know, well, you know, you pull something out. Well, at least I never. And then you unload. You know, and the spouse is thinking, man, I thought that was way behind us. You know, that was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, however many. You know, that was way back when. And, you know, nobody said anything about it all this time. And now all of a sudden, it's being used as ammunition against the spouse. You know, when you forgive, you've got to learn to let it go. You know, again, that is forgiveness. True forgiveness means that you have granted pardon for the act or for the behavior, and then you're going to put it behind you and move forward and not keep bringing it up or not save it for just this perfect time to then throw it in their face. Let those things go. And then number 7, spitting in your food, or just really using some passive-aggressive comments to make the other person feel guilty. You know, if you were more spiritual, you know, then you would figure it out, or you'd X, Y, Z. You know, if you would just learn to make a decision, then we wouldn't have these problems. You know, we're taking something and we're trying to make the other person feel guilty about it. And there's nothing Christ honoring or God glorifying in these behaviors. And we've got to stop them in order to move on in our marriages. So 5 communication principles. And then I have 9 steps and then we'll be done. So 14 things that we'll cover hopefully in the next 45 minutes, 40 minutes, 45 minutes. All right. The principle of first response. The principle of first response. And we mentioned this just a little bit last week. But who is it? Who ends up normally getting penalized in a competitive environment in sports? You know, is it the first offense or the second offense that usually gets penalized or seen by the referees or the umpires? All right, it's usually the second one. You know, the first guy gets the cheap shot in, but it's when the second person, the one that's just got the cheap shot, when they respond to it, they're the ones that end up getting called for the penalty. And you know what? You can't help catching a cheap shot now and then. But what you can do is you can determine how you respond to the cheap shot. And all of us have moments. All of us have, you know, we're tired, we're sick, we're had a bad day, whatever. And we say something that we shouldn't. And we respond in a way that we shouldn't. You know, we say something hurtful to our spouse, and we shouldn't. But that should be, that's the first thing. As the person hearing that, you know what, you should have the grace, you should have the mercy to say, to think in your mind, you know what, I'm sure they didn't mean that. Or maybe they did mean it. Maybe you're thinking, yeah, they really meant that. But I'm not going to let them get to me. I'm not going to let that affect me. You know what? I'm going to be filled with the Holy Spirit. I'm going to allow the Holy Spirit. I'm going to filter my comment through the Holy Spirit. And I'm not just going to respond out of my own human flesh. And that takes a lot of strength. That takes a lot of effort to do that. You know, we talked last week a little bit about sometimes you just have to bite your tongue, literally, and think about what you're going to say. But the power rests with the responder. So really, you have to understand that if you're the responder, you're the one that's in control at that moment. And you've got to accept the fact that what you say or what you do at that moment is really going to determine the direction of this communication and where it goes, the path of the communication. You know, Proverbs 15:1. Anybody know it off the top of your head? A soft answer does what? Turns away wrath. But grievous words stir up anger. All right, so as the responder, what are we to do? We're going to give a soft answer. Because, again, unless you just love fighting, unless you enjoy having a bad relationship, you know, you don't want to respond grievously or with harsh words. Because it's always going to just stir up more anger. It's going to stir up more strife. It's not going to solve anything. It just makes it worse. So at that point, you've got to discipline yourself and just in your mind, in your heart, say, you know what, I'm not going to let them get me going down that road. I'm going to have the strength. I'm going to ask the Spirit of God. I'm going to do whatever it takes to not go down that path. You know, we can look at Christ in the Gospels. You know, how many times was he attacked? How many times was he confronted with the scribes or the Pharisees or the Jews striving to get him into an argument or trying to get him to say something that they could make accusation and accuse him of? And yet each time they failed because the direction of the conflict rested with Christ. And he didn't give in to them. And so the implications of that are huge. Because if Christ didn't, then we should be able to, and again, we're going to fail, we're not going to do it every time, 100% of the time, but we should strive, our goal should be to not go down that path. You know, our thought should be that, you know, my wife's sin doesn't give me free license to sin in return. You know, my sin doesn't give her license either. And so by following the principle of first response, we can take a poorly spoken comment and redirect it and strive to make something positive out of it. Number two, the principle of physical touch. Now, it's really hard to apply this once an argument has begun. But if you strive to plan your conversations like you ought to, then it makes it a little easier. All right. So a perfect time is if you know you're going to have to discuss something and it tends to be, you know, something that might lead to some tension and you just know that this might be a difficult conversation to have, then, you know, ask your spouse, you know, can we sit down this evening and talk about something? You know, don't do it during dinner. Don't do it right before bedtime. You know, those are really not great times to have serious conversations. But, you know, pick a time that is good for both of you. And then, you know, sit next to each other. Grab each other's hands or, you know, rubber feet. Do something. You know, have some type of physical touch between you as you begin the conversation. You know, and one of the things we'll look at is number five, I think it is, or down here. Yeah, five. But pray. You know, before you start your conversation, pray. You know, it's amazing how many things would go more smoothly if we would include God in them. And if we would just take 30 seconds, 15 seconds, you know, to pray and ask God to give wisdom as we talk, as we discuss. And then as you're sitting there, you know, one of the things about, you know, if you're holding hands or touching, you know, normally what happens when things start to escalate? What's going to happen? You're going to pull away. You're going to let go. And that should immediately remind you, you know what, this isn't going in the right direction. And then you have a choice to make. You know, are we going to pull it back? Or are we going to get back, you know, to where we ought to be? And are we going to, you know, realize that this is a deterrent and we shouldn't be arguing and we shouldn't be letting it escalate, so we're going to bring it back? Or you're going to drift into the argument, and that physical separation is a visual and physical cue that your conversation is going in the wrong direction. And so that should be a reminder to you, you know what, let's get back on the right track. Let's bring it back. Let's start coming back to where we ought to be in that. So the principle of physical touch. Number three, the principle of proper timing. Proper timing. And again, a conversation can go the totally wrong direction if it's brought up at the wrong time. You know, we mentioned a little bit, one of the last 2 weeks, about, you know, if you, you know, the same applies with your children as it does with your spouse. You know, if you're angry at your children, if you're embarrassed by something they just did, that's probably not the best time to have a conversation with them or to discipline them. You know, if you're tired, if you're really busy, those aren't good times to strive to have a conversation, a profitable one. So you've got to, again, coordinate your schedules. You know, you've got to, and sometimes it's just a matter of saying, you know what, we really need to talk and we've got to get something out. I've got to get this out of the way. And at that point, you know, you're, as we said the first week, you're on the same team. You know, if a teammate comes to the team and says, hey, we need to talk, the other teammates don't go, oh, shut up, I don't need to listen to you. No, if you're on the same team, then the idea is that you want to listen to each other. You want to hear what they have to say. You want to strive to promote a unity among them. And so if someone wants to discuss something, then the other person should, because of their love, because of their interest, because of their desire to work effectively, then the other spouse should be, you know what, Lynn, let's set this time aside. Let's make time to talk about it. If it's important to you, it's important to me. And that should be our attitude. You know, it shouldn't be, oh, you're just making stuff up and you know, but what? No, if it's important enough to them that they want to talk about it, then it needs to be discussed and it needs to be talked about. Now, at some point, again, you know, we can take that too far, and you can, you know, if they're bringing the same thing up and it's, you know, way down the road somewhere, at some point, you know, we do need to kind of put it behind us and bury it. But if the initial problem comes up, then yes, it needs to be discussed. You know, everybody needs to get on the same page. And even if you agree maybe to disagree on the solution, you should still be able to do that amicably and be kind and loving about that. Then number four, the principle of mirroring. It's important that as you are communicating, as you're talking, that you are sure that you are hearing correctly. You know, as Pastor Bill used to say, don't hear what I'm not saying kind of thing. And often I think we do that. You know, we hear what we want to hear, or we hear something the way we want to hear it. And that's not necessarily always how it's being portrayed. You know, again, why? Because as we talked last week, we have different personalities. You know, we are different in our means of communication. And some, you know, some people are more just, we stick with the facts and, you know, we just say, well, you know, very minimally what's there. And that can be perceived as, well, they don't really care, or, you know, they're being harsh. You know, they're not being loving. There are all these, you know, other factors in that. So we've got to be careful that we don't think we hear what someone else isn't saying. But at the same time, we do want to make sure that we are communicating effectively. So how can we do that? Well, often it would help to repeat something back to the person you're talking to. You know, and if they say something, you can either ask a question, you know, what do you mean by that? Or you can say, so what I think you're saying is, and then you repeat to them what you think they just said. Or, you know, are you saying, and then you repeat to them what you think they said in your own words. All right. So you're not repeating to them exactly what they said, how they said it, but you're repeating it in a way that makes sense to you. And then the key here is that you have to allow them to either correct you and say, no, that's not what I meant, or that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, and then let them fill in the blank again. Or they can affirm that, yes, you're correct. That's what I meant. That's what I said. So the point of mirroring isn't to be right. It's not to defend yourself, but it's to know that you are hearing accurately and that the person, you know, that they hear are hearing what you're saying, that they understand, they have a grasp of what you're saying, and they can repeat it back to you. You know, it's very effective with your children. You know, you tell your children something and then say, what did I just say? And make them tell you. It's amazing when you ask that, because half the time they just look at you like, I don't know. What, you know, they weren't listening. They don't have a clue what you just said. You know, so make them repeat it back to you. Because then what happens is, you know, you tell them, go clean up your room, and, you know, it goes in one ear out the other. And then, you know, you're all frustrated because they're not cleaning their room. And then when you say, you know, why aren't you cleaning your room? They just look at you like, I didn't know I was supposed to. And you're like, I just told you. But they didn't hear it. They weren't listening. They might have heard it, but they weren't listening. My dad used to always say that, you know, listen to what I say. Don't just hear it. And so how do we make sure someone's truly listening? You make them repeat it back to you. And once they do that, then you can hold them accountable for it. And as a spouse, you know, it's important, not that we're going to hold them accountable for it, but it's important that at least we know that, you know what, it's they heard what I had to say. They understood what I had to say. You know, and then it's up to them to take that and to do with it what they need to do. And then number five, the principle of prayer. The principle of prayer. And I can't really stress this enough. How important it is to pray. You know, we can do so many things, but if we're not praying, if we're not asking for God to intervene, a lot of times what we are doing is pointless. And it's not, it might help a little bit, it might kind of, you know, you're putting a Band-Aid on a cut, but it's not going to cure the scab. And it's only through prayer that the scabs are going to heal and are able to go away. And so we have got to bathe our relationships. We've got to bathe our conversations in prayer. And it's not complicated, but so many couples are not accustomed to praying with each other. And we, unfortunately, I think those of us that have been in church for a long time, you know, we hear talk about prayer and about praying, and yet we just really don't take it all that seriously, because it's something that we hear about all the time. And, you know, maybe in your life, you don't really see that many answers to prayer. And so we kind of feel like, well, what's the sense in praying? Because, you know, I prayed for somebody for this length of time and, you know, they didn't get better. And I prayed about this and that didn't happen. And, you know, we almost get the idea that, you know, well, God doesn't answer my prayer, so why try? And yet I'm sure if we really went back and analyzed, God is answering prayers. God is working. We just, again, we are focusing on the times that He hasn't answered a prayer as opposed to the times that He has answered. And so we've got to be faithful to pray. R.A. Torrey said, the reason why many fail in battle, and R.A. Torrey was a preacher from 1800s, 1900s? Okay, late 1800s into the early 1900s, but preacher and evangelist. But he said, the reason why many fail in battle is because they wait until the hour of battle. The reason why others succeed is because they have gained their victory on their knees long before the battle came. And then he said, anticipate your battles, fight them on your knees before temptation comes, and then you will always have the victory. And you know what? We don't do that. You know, we wait until the moment of, and then we scramble. And we try to make it work. We're really, you know, we should be anticipating all those things. We should be praying about all those things ahead of time. And so as couples, we need to be used to praying together. And it will help in communication. And if you're not used to praying together, you know, just, you know, really 30 seconds before you go to bed at night, you know, just to start, or spend a little extra time, you know, at family at dinner, you know, and praying a little bit longer then, not so long that your food gets cold, but long enough to let it cool off a little bit. Unless you like really, really hot food, then that won't work. But, you know, we've got to understand that our spouse is the single most important person that you have in your life. And like it or not, communication is the tool that God has given to us to knit our hearts and minds together. And success is possible if we're willing to intentionally or to apply some intentional principles to our lives. Because God wants all of us to have communication that's honoring and pleasing to Him. And so we've got to work at these things. And it takes time. It takes effort. You know, the different obstacles that we looked at last week, well, you know, how do you overcome them? You have to practice it. You have to realize, you know, this is my weakness, either receiving it or giving. This is my weakness. And I've just got to, I have to work on that. I have to pray about that. I have to then practice not falling back into that area. And you know, again, there's no magic pill to take. There's no magic, you know, bullet to shoot somebody with. You know, you have to work through those things and practice them. All right, so 9 steps to help you improve. 9 steps. First and foremost, stop and listen. Stop and listen. All right. So one of the cool things about communication is, you know what, you can learn to communicate better. You know, it's not one of these things where you either have it or you don't. You know, all of us can improve in communication because it's a skill. It's something that we learn. It's something that we can learn to do better. And yet communication often either makes or breaks the relationship. And so if you can begin improving your communication skills and how you communicate, it's only going to help in the future. You know, it's not going to make things worse. It's going to make things better. So first, stop and listen. Be calm. You know, when that first thing is said, if it's not said appropriately, not said properly, again, the first thing that you need to do, especially if you're an emotional person, is you've just got to be calm. You've got to stop. You've got to listen to what's being said. And then realize, you know what? Let me hear them out. And let me truly listen to what they're saying. You know, and again, maybe not always the words, but listen to what's behind that. Listen to why they're saying it, to striving to understand your spouse. You know, if you went through the personality things and if you get the 5 love languages and go through that, just to help you understand them more, then as they're speaking, it will help you to get a better grasp of where they're coming from. And so often we're afraid of not being heard that we just keep, you know, the impulse is, well, I'm just going to keep talking. You know, I'm just going to keep throwing my thought out there over and over again. But at some point you need to just, you know, get calm, you know, the one that's listening and then the one that's talking as well. It's important that you stop at some point and then listen to the response. And the temptation too often is that when you do stop talking, you're not listening. You're doing number two. You're just thinking about what you want to say next. And even if it's not an argument, even if you're just, you know, if it's just a conversation, too often, you know, one person's, you know, they're saying, you know, what, you know, you sit down for dinner and, you know, so what happened to you today? So, you know, they mention one thing and then you go to share what happened to you. But they're not really listening to what you're saying. They're thinking about the next story that they want to tell you. And so then when they pause and say, what do you think? Well, you didn't really listen to what they said, so you don't really know what to think, because all you were thinking about is what you wanted to say next when they paused and took a breath. And so, you know, you've got to force yourself to hear what your spouse is saying. You know, say what you want to say and then take a pause, stop, be calm, and then relax and think and listen to what they're saying. You know, put your thoughts aside. Listen to your spouse. Repeat, again, we go back to the mirroring. You know, repeat what they've said so that they know that you're really listening to them. You know, if they're telling you about what a bad day they had, then say, so you had a bad day because of, and then, you know, say it back to them. You know, and again, I think that helps us process information. It'll help them to kind of process that as well and to be able to come to grips with it a little bit better. And then number three, be honest and open with your spouse. Just tell the truth. You know, I'm amazed at how many spouses aren't honest with their spouse. You know, and again, I know if you're in a classified job and, you know, there are things you can't share, I get that. I'm not talking about that. But aside from that, aside from, you know, commitments and work things that you're not allowed to talk about, you know, be honest with your spouse and tell the truth. You know, learn to open up your life to them and take a step towards doing that. Don't hide your emotions from them. Don't pretend that everything's all right when it isn't all right. You know, don't give your spouse the silent treatment, you know, because you're upset or because you just don't want to talk. You know, that it's not useful. You know, it's kind of like having a nail with no hammer. You know, what are you going to do with it? You know, we take your shoe off or, you know, it's not real effective. You know, and the silent treatment is just that. It's not effective. You know, you've got to learn to share. You've got to learn to listen. When your spouse wants to share, you know, take that time as together time. Being open means talking about things that maybe you've never talked about with another person. But it's things, again, that are in your heart, that are inside you, that you need to share. And often it means that makes you vulnerable. It, you know, being honest with your partner, being completely and unashamedly honest with them and sharing your heart with them, it does open a door of vulnerability. And so on the flip side of that, you know what, you've got to handle that very carefully. You know, don't take what they say and then throw it back at them. You know, again, it's not going to help. It just makes things worse. You know, your relationship's got to be built on trust. And the trust that you can say, you can share your heart, you can share your feelings, you can share with them, and they're not going to take that and use it against you. And so again, it's taking both people. It's taking both of you giving 100% of yourself to each other, to the relationship, and striving to work together in that. And I know sometimes sometimes it's not 100% of each. And I get that, and that's where difficulties come in. You know, when you have one person that's 100% committed to the relationship and the other person's, 60-70% in, but not quite at 100, yes, it makes it difficult. You know, yes, it's going to make for more struggles. And you can't force your spouse to be 100%. You know, all you can do is really and truly pour your heart out before God for them and to strive to give 100% of yourself. And then to pray that they will come around, that they will make the effort and make your relationship more important. Then number four, pay attention to nonverbal signs. You know, it's not always what we say, but how we say it. And again, that was one of the things I remember as a child growing up. My dad used to tell us, he said, "You can come and talk to your mother or me about whatever you want, but be careful how you say it." You know, as long as you're respectful, as long as you are, respecting them as your mom and dad, you can come and say what you want to say. So it's not so much what we say, it's how we say it. You know, it's the attitude in which it's said. It's the emotion with which it's said. And so the nonverbal communication is also important. And again, these are things we've got to work on. These are things that we can practice. You know, our body language, the tone of our voice, the inflection, the eye contact, how far away you are when you're talking to someone. You know, and looking at all of that. You know, if you're talking to me and I go like this, what do you immediately think? Huh? I'm either standoffish or I'm getting ready to defend. Right? You know, if I'm not looking at you in the eye and you're talking to me and I'm staring at somebody else, what do you think? They're not interested. They're just not listening. If you're talking to your child and they keep looking down, what does that usually mean? That they've closed off or they're ashamed. You know, they're guilty and then they're getting ready to lie or they did lie and... And again, as a kid growing up, it was look me in the eye. You know, it's like, why? It's like, okay, I know what, It's like you can look through their eyes and what the truth is. You know, so if you're talking with your spouse and they're not giving eye contact, there's an issue there. There's a problem. You know, when someone keeps getting louder and more aggressive, in your conversation, obviously something is really irritating them. And they're starting to get very emotionally involved. You know, whether they don't feel like you're listening or that you're not hearing them or that you're not understanding them. And for some reason, we think if you don't understand me, I'll just say it louder the next time and then you'll get it. Well, okay, it doesn't work that way. You know, you can say the same thing 10 times and get louder every time, but if they didn't understand it the first time, they probably won't understand it the 10th time. So again, what do? We have to go back to, do you understand what I'm saying? Are you getting this? Can I say it a different way? Or what do you think I'm saying? And so we go back to one of those tools to try to mirror and try to understand what each is saying. So all the while that you're communicating, that you're talking, watch the nonverbal signs on your side too. It's not just you're looking at your spouse and analyzing them. Realize that, you have body language too. And so be careful what your body language is when you're talking. And then number five, stay focused. Stay focused in the here and now. And again, sometimes discussions do go south and they do change into discussions about other things and everything else other than what needs to be discussed. But at that point, Don't default back to your obstacle, your weakness, or your obstacle in communication. Don't go down the rabbit trails. Bring the conversation back to the topic at hand. And again, you have to work at that. You have to practice at doing that. You have to be mindful of it. That, you know, as you're starting to talk about one thing, my previous boss before Pastor Sean, the pastor that was here before him was great at this. It was terrible, but he was great at it. You know, you would go into his office to discuss something, and if he didn't want to discuss that, he would just kind of work his way around it and start talking about other things and then tell you what a great guy you were and what an awesome job you're doing and on, and then he'd pray with you and say, okay, and, you know, send you on your way. And as you're walking back into your office, you know, you're thinking all good about yourself, and you think, wait a minute, we never talked about what I went in there to do or to talk about. You know, and he just, you know, gave me the runaround out the door, but he didn't, you know, we never discussed this. And so don't do that. You know, it was basically a master manipulator. You know, don't be that in your marriage. Don't manipulate your spouse. You know, focus on the here and now. Hear what is being said. Stay in the moment. Stay in the discussion. You know, don't get the cheap shot in, or don't start, you know, again, don't default to all those things. You know, one person has to be the stronger one to bring the conversation back to where it started. You know, somebody has to de-escalate. You know, even if that means, you know what, just saying, I think things are getting a little out of hand. We just need to take a break and we'll come back and talk about this later. You know, and then at that point, you know what, both of you just need to realize, you know, this is, you know, don't follow them as they're walking away from you. Don't you walk away from me, you know, and you start going after them. No, if you're at that point, you're out of control. You know, you've gone beyond where you need to be. All right. You know, if one or the other is saying, you know, hey, we need to take a break. I'm going to go in the other room for a little while. And you're following them, then, you know, you've lost it. And you have got to get control of yourself at that point. You know, there's nothing wrong with taking a break and then coming back when both people have regained composure to finish talking about something. Which then leads us into number 6. Minimize your emotions. Minimize your emotions. You know, and again, if you're planning a conversation, sometimes you know, it helps to write out pros and cons. You know, it helps to write out positives and negatives and, you know, write things out. You know, if that helps you to think, if that helps you to express things, you know, learn to write them down and kind of have a, you know, and again, I mean, if you have a piece of paper that you go into a conversation with, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's not like you have to keep it all memorized or whatever. I mean, it's you're talking to this, your spouse, the person that you married. You know, if you want to write some things down so that you can remember what you know, things that you want to share, do that. You know, if that helps you to remain a little calmer, to stay on track, then do that. And respect that if your spouse is like that. And then number 7, we don't like to say this or to admit to it, but you need to be ready to surrender and stop an argument. You know, too often we just simply want to prove that we're right. And again, does it really matter? Does it matter who's right or who's wrong? Now, yes, if it's, you know, something major, I get that. But, you know, I changed the baby's diaper last. It's your turn. No, you didn't. I did. Well, okay. Does it really matter? Just go change the diaper. You know, somebody's got to do it. You know, the kid can't do it himself. So, you know, just go change the diaper. You know, you don't have to prove that, yes, I really did. And, you know, this is my, you know, this is the one I did. And, you know, here's what's in it. And I remember. Okay. Big whoop. You know, let it go. You know, be the stronger person and just walk away when necessary. You know, and again, if you're the other spouse, let them walk away. Don't keep, you know, You don't have to prove that you're always right. You know, be willing to surrender and back off. Because again, what's the alternative? You can either be in a happy relationship where you respect the other person even if you occasionally disagree with them, or you can be in an unhappy relationship where you know you're always right no matter what. But what fun is that? So it really comes down to your priorities. Is being right more important to you than your spouse's happiness? And if that's the case, then you really need to change your priorities. Because their happiness should be more important than whether you're right all the time or whether you're not. Then number 8, humor and playfulness usually help. And I'm not talking about sarcasm. All right, sarcasm usually is not helpful. It might be funny for the one saying it, but it's usually not funny for the one receiving it. All right, so, you know, sarcasm is not a positive thing, but that using some humor to lighten up the mood or to lighten things up, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, and again, as you look at your personalities, if your spouse is a little more humorous than you are, you don't look at it as, well, they're just making fun of me. All right, you can't look at it that way. All right. You know, sometimes Beth's a little more humorous than I am. And sometimes, you know, it's like I feel like she's making fun of me. And I know she's not, but that's sometimes how I interpret it. And so I have to just think, you know what? She's just trying to lighten the mood. She's trying to be funny. What? I missed that. What'd you do?
I just said her. Can you imagine that?
All right. Refocus. Back on the trail. What? Yes. At least, maybe more. All right, but humor helps lighten everyday frustrations, and it really helps put them in more perspective. It's more and it's more gentle than other methods. You know, if you can kind of get people to laugh and to, you know, laugh at themselves with things, then, you know, that's a great blessing. And again, you just be careful with that. You know, be careful with the humor that you're not putting the other person in a position where they think they're being laughed out or being made fun of. But humor helps. And a little bit of playfulness. I know we're all adults, but you know, I think all of us, if we're serious, we would admit that, you know, sometimes we enjoy, you know, kind of shedding the adulthoodness and just being, you know, having a little bit of freedom to kind of be a child again, you know, and enjoy some things like that. And then number 9, lastly, realize communication can be more than just talking. And there's many ways to communicate in today's day and age. And I'm not saying that we should utilize all of them and not talk, because we still need to learn to talk. We still, there are very few things, if anything, is going to replace face-to-face conversation. But with that said, I'm also not going to say that, you know, texting your spouse or emailing your spouse or, you know, I would be really... I don't know. I really struggle with the Facebook thing and all of that, because too often the temptation there is that you get mad and so you throw something out there for the whole world to see. Or on the flip side, you're in a great mood and you say something really nice for everybody, and it's almost like other people can track your moods. You know, oh, they're in a good mood today. Oh, things aren't so great today. And you know, you're always going, you know, don't use Facebook's just that. That's not what you should use it for. All right. That's for a Christian. That shouldn't be its purpose. All right. You know, now I will say, though, that, you know, texting your spouse during the day, if they are allowed to get texts at work and whatever, you know, but just sending them a quick text to let them know that you're thinking about them, that you're praying for them, that, you know, that if you had a bad morning and things didn't get off to a good start, you know, shoot them a text and just say, you know, hey, I'm sorry this morning went bad. You know, I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing you this evening. You know, so those are important means of communicating. You know, sometimes if it's a more serious conversation, you know, sometimes I think that it is good sometimes to email, you know, put your thoughts in words, you know, and email that to your spouse to give them an opportunity to read it and to comprehend it, to let it kind of soak in. Now, again, you know, don't be one of these where you write an email and just shoot it right away. You know, write it and then, you know, save it as a draft. You know, go back and reread it until you're ready and you feel very confident that it's going to be received in the tone and the way in which you are meaning for it to. All right. But, you know, you can do that. You can use email. You can use text. And those can be very useful means of communicating, because then it gives them, it doesn't put them on the defensive right away. It gives them an opportunity to read it and to think through it and to respond when they're ready. Or, you know, you send an email and say, you know, this evening I would really like to discuss this with you, you know, so that at least they can kind of get prepared. You know, I'm not one, I don't think quick on my feet. You know, when when Lauren or Heather would ask me something, you know, Dad, what do you think about? Well, I would say, you know what, let me think about that. I'll get back with you. Because, you know, I have to think through those things. You know, I can't just give a quick answer. Well, not sometimes, but, you know, generally, I don't. You know, I want to think through those things. I want to, when I give an answer, I want to be confident that it's a good answer. You know, and that it's, in my opinion, this is the best solution to the problem. You know, some people are just the opposite. You know, they're really quick. They can give an answer real fast. And, you know, it's usually a good solution. You know, if you're like that, that's fine. But if you're not, you know, if you're quick at that and your spouse isn't, then realize when they email or vice versa, you know, they need time to think about it. And so don't put the same demand on them that you have on yourself. So nobody is a perfect communicator all the time, but you know what? All of us can work to become better communicators by praying, by trying, by practicing. And not all these things are going to work for everybody all the time, every time. But some of them will work some of the time for everyone. And so however it starts, you know, all of us can make an effort to improve. We can encourage each other in the effort to improve as well. All right, we got about 10 minutes. Does anybody have any questions you want to pass down, and we'll jumble them all together and try to answer? We've got about 10 minutes left. Anybody? Going once, going twice. Yes.
Oh, if you want to ask it, that's fine too. So do you practice not going to bed?
For us, yes, for the most part, and as much as possible, I would encourage that. I'm sure that there are some where, you know, at some point, you know, if it gets too late, you know, I'm not going to say that every time somebody has a disagreement, you know, that you're not going to have to sleep on it maybe a little bit, or, you know, at least you agree to disagree for the time being, and or you agree to, okay, you know, we're at least both calm now and we've reached the point at which we're, you know, we can go to bed and we can discuss it at another time or finish the discussion at another time. But as much as lies within us, I would say yes, that, you know, you need to get those things resolved before you go to bed at night as much as possible. Anybody else have a question you wrote down or you want to throw out? Otherwise,
I won't make you guys come up here, but I think it'll reach.
Sorry. All right. I'll let you stay there. I made Mark and Denise come up here last week. So a couple questions that we got turned in. How do you deal with or get past the obstacle of effective communication that you struggle with? All right. Who wants to go ahead, Randy? Got to use the mic. Okay. Well, my thought was, and while he's thinking, it's something you have to practice. If you know that you struggle in an area of communicating effectively, then you have to acknowledge it. You have to let your spouse know, I struggle with this. Just like I said, I don't think quick on my feet. So if Beth wants a fast decision, I just have to say, don't put me in that position. I need to think it through. Let me think through the different solutions, different probabilities, and let me come up with an answer for you. But don't back me in a corner and try to force me to come up with something. And then, practice that and just work at it. Obviously prayer, but, it should in time get easier for you.
Robin and I have two completely different types of conversations about this. First is, it takes for a while to sort things out. And so I have to be respectful of that. If I don't allow her to do that, the whole verse about your tongue is very sharp. First, yeah, if I don't allow her to think things through.
Okay. Do you want to add anything to that, Robin? Okay. All right. Then another question here, how do you get past a hurtful situation your spouse won't address or they minimize it? How do you help them see the damage that's being done?
That's a very hard one. It all comes back down to you have to pray about it and you have to be very adamant in your prayer. I had that issue. I had to see the big picture. I truly did. It took a lot of work on my part to see the big picture. There were things that were going on, and it wasn't my fault, but it was. Robin took the others for things. I had to take the others for things. But I had to truly ask God to help me for that, to open my eyes to that. And I had to be willing to see the bad parts to myself before I realized what the good. It's hard.
That's
a hard question.
But
it all comes down to prayer.
Okay.
And you have to pray that God changes your heart to love your husband as he created them and to show him. You can't ask him to change your heart. You have to ask him to change your heart to love the husband like he is.
Okay.
All
right. And then the only thing I would add to that is, we 2 weeks ago we said, marriage is a team effort. And if one person has an issue, then your thought process should be, if one person has an issue, we both have an issue. Because if it concerns them, it's going to concern me at some point in time. And the sooner that I get it resolved, or the sooner that we can work it out, the better off we are. And so as one flesh, what's important to one is important to both. And then another question, if a couple has an argument in the morning or at the start of the day, how long do we give each other to cool down before talking to them about it? If one is a little quieter and tends to shut down in an argument and the other one wants to talk it out, where is the balance in that?
In our house, when she tells me it's time to talk about it, it'll be hard, but it's because it takes her a little longer. I'll ask, and she'll let me know. Not yet, but whatever it is. Maybe in raising our kids, I don't know. Pick a subject, we've had disagreements about it. And so when she's ready, because I push her, not her true answer is going to come out. That's why I don't know how long that is.
So you just ask and say, are you ready to talk?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But it's not a week. It's not 2 days. It's an hour, 2 hours. That's about it.
And I would agree. I mean, I think each of us would be different. I think the situation would be different. Where, it's the same with the same when I discipline my children. There were times I just said, Lauren, you go to your room because if I'd do the Homer Simpson thing. I'd be strangling her if I didn't get her out of my sight for a few minutes. You know, just go to your room. I'll be in there when I'm ready. And you know, sometimes, you know, there were times it took, 10, 15 minutes. There were times it was an hour or more, because I really was upset. And there were a couple times she did something that, I'd sit there and think, I can't believe my kid did that. What is she thinking? What's wrong with her head? And you're going through all that, how am I going to address that with her? And so, I think a lot of it depends on what the circumstance is, how serious it is, and then really how the other person is and how long it takes them to kind of get to a place when they're ready to talk. And again, I don't think you should push that, as Randy said, but you can't just let it get covered up and not be addressed either. So it still needs to be addressed. And again, as two people that are different, you still have to defer to the other and not be like, well, they don't want to talk about it, so I'll defer. No, it's still got to be addressed and discussed. And both people need to understand that. If you're the quieter one and you just would rather not, well then, you need to overcome that weakness of saying, okay, well, yes, we do need to talk about it. And, when I'm ready, I'll let you know, or when, you kind of ask and work that out together. All right. It's 7:13, time to go. Please, if you have questions, write them down, leave them on the table in the back, and we'll address them. We will think through them this week and pray over them. And answer them next week. Next week's our last week. Next week I really want to cover some just really practical things. I have a list of like 50 things I think that I came up with. I worked on for several weeks, months, really. We'll just kind of talk through them. Might talk a little bit about companionship as well. And so we'll do that. Let's pray and you'll be dismissed. Father, thank you for the time together tonight. And I pray that you would help us to practice being more effective in our communication, and help us to strive to overcome the areas in which we're weak, and that we will allow the Holy Spirit to make us stronger in those areas. Help us to use our strengths to honor and glorify you, and that we would take our strengths and help build our spouse with them, and then that they would do the same, because often the strength that we have would be a weakness that they have, and vice versa. And so help us to utilize the strengths that you have given us to enable them and to make them stronger, that we wouldn't lord it over them and put them down, but that we would use it to make them stronger as well. And I pray that you would bless in each of the lives that are represented here tonight. Use them and help them in the days ahead. In Christ's name, amen.